Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable for this Tuesday, the 15th of May. Very nice to have you with us. 13 minutes past the hour of 9 o'clock. And good morning. And thank you for being with us on our program. Let me introduce all of our panelists to you, or at least most of them. And we will get started for a very interesting day filled with interesting topics. And it seems like I say that every day, but that seems to be the case every day, does it not? All right. First of all, Alan Chartek is here. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Yo, Joe, I'm here.
Good. Thank God. It's good to have you. We appreciate your presence, as always. Let me also thank J.P. Miller for being with us. He is here every Tuesday, and we're thrilled he's here because today's Tuesday. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning, Joe. I'm great. Thank you for having me.
It's always a pleasure. Mike Spain will be along in a moment. He is our associate editor. Well, he is the associate editor of the Times Union and has been away for 2 weeks and forgot how to get into work on time. No, just kidding. He got stuck in traffic. There's a really bad accident on the thruway. So Mike is taking some back roads, and he'll be with us in just a minute. Teresa Bourgeois is with us, and she is a communications consultant, and we are thrilled to have her. Good morning.
Delighted to be here on school budget voting day, right? Is it just in this area or all over the state?
I think it is all over the state.
Every town, but there are... There are many across the state.
What do they call it, like Big Tuesday or something? Is that what they call it or something like that? It's got some weird name.
But don't forget.
Yes, that's right. It all begins with the school, doesn't it?
That's right.
Let's go to topics and then we'll... couple things. First of all, just a quick reminder, if you want to get in on the action and write to us, all you have to do is go to panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. And I do want to make mention of this. Alan and I want to talk to you about something very important, and that is the lockbox. The lockbox is open, as you know, and we have less than 3 weeks till we start the fund drive on June 4th. So we're trying to, you know, get that lockbox as filled as we possibly can.
Incentivize
indeed. So our friends at SPAC, better known as SPAC, but it is the Saratoga Performing Arts Center, SPAC, they have offered and have undated lawn tickets, so you can go see any New York City Ballet performance. You can go see any Philadelphia Orchestra performance. There are a couple of exceptions. You can't go to the gala, you can't go to the jazz festival, and you can't go see Harry Potter or Star Wars. Other than that, you're free to go. Quick tale out of school here, though, but the last time I was at SPAC, I found Teresa Bourgeois, and she's been with us ever since.
That's a true story.
Yeah, that is a true story. I met her at a meet and greet.
That's how you met her?
That's how I met her. Yep, very cool.
That's true.
You get a pair of... You just never know what's going to happen when you go to SPAC. So for $150, you get a pair of undated lawn tickets to SPAC. You can go for the performances. This includes the National Ballet of Cuba. It includes the New York City Ballet. And it includes the Philadelphia Orchestra. So these are performances basically running from June 6th through August 18th. And you also get a very cool, Alan is holding it up now. It is a WAMC lawn blanket.
It's wonderful.
Yeah, this is cool. It folds all up into a little satchel. And then it says WAMC Northeast Public Radio. So you out yourself to all your friends, and that's great. And it's perfect for the lawn because even if the lawn is a little, you know, goopy, it doesn't matter because it's going to keep you nice and dry and fresh.
So let me get this straight, Joe. Is it either or? Either you get the tickets to the SPAC or you get the package?
No, sir. It's the baby and the bathwater.
Wow. And you don't want to throw either of them out.
No, you do not. So for $150 right now, you get the
No. Who authorized this? Who authorized this massive giveaway?
This is what happens. Alan said this is above my pay grade.
Who authorized it?
Alan's gone wild.
It's Northeast Public Radio blanket, and it's a really cool blanket. You can, if you want to see a picture of it, you can go online, and we'll have a picture of it up there.
Yeah.
And you get the undated lawn tickets to SPAC. So that's the New York City Ballet. Hello, it's the New York City Ballet. And the Philadelphia Orchestra, and also the National Ballet of Cuba is coming for three performances, I believe. So, very cool.
And Joe, let me get this straight, just so I understand it. So you get the tickets, But only while they last, because they didn't give us 10,000 tickets. They were very generous.
They gave us a lot of tickets, but not. But yes, if everyone were to call right now, we'd be out of them.
Yeah. So this is it. You know, and you get that. You can put your fanny on the blanket.
Now, what did you just say about
Joshua Bell?
Yeah, you go see Joshua Bell.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, that's right. Included. Now that's one of the performances,
wow.
And that's our WAMC night, and that's when we met Teresa. Was WAMC
magical?
Night.
Yes, indeed. Indeed.
And by the way, if you stand outside where the performers come out, you'll see a lot of people want to talk to Joshua Bell.
He is so
why do you think that is?
Great.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
magical. I heard him last year.
Yeah, it's very good stuff. Well, you can go to WAMC.org, WAMC.org, and you can help out the lockbox. You can put in whatever you can put in, but for $150, we'll send you the tickets, which, by the way, the fun drive begins June 4th. The performances begin June 6th, so do it now. You
Whoa.
Know? Yeah.
Are you sure this has been authorized? Did you check with Colleen?
It has a check on it. Yeah, we seem to be all right. You get a blanket, you get the tickets, and we're all set. So, and by the way, I don't want to confuse you. This is not the Greylock blanket. This is the Lawn blanket, especially designed to go to places. Yes, to go to places like
you can wrap it up and it fastens. Right,
that's right.
It's a concert blanket.
That's right. It's for SPAC. It's for Tanglewood. It's for outdoor venues where you go out during the summer.
Picnics. Yeah,
that's right.
But it's not any outside blanket. It's a special WAMC one.
That's right. It is embossed with WAMC, and you can have
it's embossed and engrossed.
Engorged.
And enrolled.
That's right. It is, and it's handsome. It's a sort of a a blue and green plaid, and it's very nice. I would say a tartan plaid.
Yeah, it's
yeah,
sharp.
It's a Murray.
Really
it's a Murray tartan.
A Murray tartan plaid.
Murray clan. Yeah.
Murray tartan.
So it's like it's a lot of fun, and you'll have a great time, and we'll suit you up for SPAC this summer or wherever you want to go, and it'll be great. WAMC.org, go to the website and help us out.
You can eat on it? You can eat on the blanket?
Absolutely.
You could lie around on the blanket?
I know where you're going, Alan.
Keep it in your car. I keep one in my car for emergencies, too. They're just because they roll up so nicely.
Yeah.
Is that what the kids are calling them now?
Emergencies.
I'm keeping Alan from falling off the cliff again, Alan.
All right.
I'm saving you from yourself.
WAMC.org. It's the picnic blanket as well as the undated lawn tickets to the Saratoga Performing Arts Center. And thanks to our friends at SPAC, and we would love to help you. Get this. All you have to do is help us. WAMC.org. Simple as that.
But and the ballet, isn't it great?
As Alan said, when they are gone, they are gone.
Right. And by the way, Joe, Roselle and I got to see the wonderful, magnificent Ruth Bader Ginsburg film. It was fabulous. If you're going to go, bring a handkerchief. That's all I got to say.
RBG.
It's wonderful. Wonderful.
Good stuff. All right. So that's that. WAMC.org, WAMC.org to help out on the lockbox. Okay. So now let's get to the work at hand, and that is to talk about the stories of the day. We will begin with the story, unfortunately, that we began with yesterday. And this goes on, and it is a horrible story, which is killings in Gaza, a new embassy in Jerusalem, and no sign of peace is the headline in this morning's New York Times. Hours before a celebration of the new U.S. embassy, at least 58 protesters were killed and thousands injured at the Gaza border, according to Palestinian officials. The two scenes illustrated the chasm dividing Israelis and Palestinians. There is a separate story of embassy as victory for Trump and a roadblock to peace. We'll talk a little bit about that. Both you'll see that peace is in almost all of the headlines this morning. But across the Gaza Strip, a Monday morning loudspeakers urged Palestinians to rush the fence bordering Israel, where they were met by army snipers. At least 60 were killed and thousands injured. Hours later, a beaming Ivanka Trump helped unveil a stone marker etched with her father's name on the new American embassy in Jerusalem, keeping his campaign promise to officially acknowledge Jerusalem as Israel's capital. An audience of 800 religious conservatives and right-wing politicians from both countries sang hallelujah. What a glorious day, exulted Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. The two scenes, only an hour's drive apart, illustrated the chasm dividing Israelis and Palestinians more than at any moment in recent history. Alan.
Well, I have to tell you, there are many things about this, of course, that are terrible. The idea of people being shot, babies disappearing or shot. The idea that in their righteousness, they bring on two preachers, one of whom has condemned Jews and said that they're going to hell, to open the and close to these two guys, which shows Netanyahu couldn't possibly have approved this, these guys being there. It just shows you, as I've said before, well, who has the whip hand between Trump and Netanyahu. This is a terrible thing. You know, Joe, as an American Jew and somebody who has always really, truly believed in the state of Israel, I can tell you how disappointed I am by all of this. There has to be a better way of doing it. I've been talking to an awful lot of other Jews, people like myself, who have always been, you know, who carried the blue and white boxes around to plant a tree in Israel early when it was a socialist state and when it was what it is. There has to be some give on the Israelis' part to somehow say we're not going to take more territory, we're not going to build more things. It is a theocracy. If for those of you who would like to be bar mitzvahed by your own rabbi in Israel, forget it. Married there, forget it. The Orthodox branch of Judaism runs a tight ship there, and in order to get elected, people like Netanyahu do it. So there's lots to talk about here. On the other hand, the Hamas leadership has been awful, just awful. Drive them into the sea. Take every bit of land back. The rhetoric has been awful. We had a chance. We saw it, Rabin, and earlier in the game. Now it's just as bad as it's ever been. I don't know the answer, but I know this isn't the way.
I thought, Alan, you did a really good job of putting all that together. It's really hard to celebrate on a day when 60 people die, and I agree with you on the preachers that they brought in were certainly disgusting. I'm really surprised that the Trump administration would do that, but I did find it remarkable that Senator Schumer, the leader of the Democratic Party in the Senate, praised Trump for his leadership on this issue, and that this had been promised by three previous presidents, and Trump was finally the president to do it. But yes, significant bloodshed and hard to celebrate on a day when all that bad stuff happens.
Teresa?
I thought the split screen coverage of this was pretty powerful and said it all. It was just so strikingly disparate and important to show both sides. And I think that, in fact, other presidents have not done this, but there's a reason that they have not done this, both Republicans and Democrats. And Alan, you know, as you talked about yesterday, because they knew there'd be repercussions. And it, as experts were talking about and commentators last night, that this was the thing you hold out to the end, that you have a peace agreement. And this was held out as the last piece of the peace agreement. And I think that you see by who didn't attend, major European, were notable by their absence, and who did attend: Albania, Austria, the Czech Republic, Hungary, Macedonia, Romania, Serbia, Ukraine.
And so, usually they get Guatemala. I don't know if they were there.
But that leaves out, you know, all of our primary
allies,
and that sends a message, the very strong message from the UN. About the actions that were taken. And so I think that this is, there is no peace negotiations on the table. I thought someone I heard last night said it very well, that the Trump may have won a political victory, a short-term political victory, but it was not a policy or diplomatic achievement in any way.
You know, I want to go to the, if I may, to sure. the Schumer comment. It's very interesting to me. You know, Chuck Schumer is a brilliant politician. The American people have never really had good things to say about the Arabs. They haven't. Let's just put it on the table. Therefore, and Schumer, of course, grew up in the same culture that I did. But on the other hand, you have to be able to step back and to say, despite the idea that you have good feelings about Israel, that you know it, that you've been there a lot of times, you have to be able to say, you know, this transcends the usual politics. I'm a big Chuck Schumer fan, always have been. But I have to say, the sort of blind obedience to this, not stepping back, not taking a careful look, not opening up, as Teresa says, the idea that there can be negotiations. And by the way, I just guess I got to say this. It isn't only the Israelis who have penned in the Palestinians into that awful hellhole known as Gaza. It's the Egyptians, too. It's many people in the Arab world who want nothing to do with them and who are insistent that they stay where they are. And, of course, it's the voters in Gaza who put Hamas into power that put a block on any kind of productive peace negotiations. So it's many-sided, and it's not an easy one.
I would just like to read, because Alan mentioned it, just read the comment real quickly before we go to a break, from Chuck Schumer. In a long overdue move, we have moved our embassy to Jerusalem. Every nation should have the right to choose its capital. I sponsored legislation to do this 2 decades ago, and I applaud President Trump for doing it. We will pause there. When we come back, we'll continue our program. We welcome your letters as well. Panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. Alan Chartok, J.P. Miller, Teresa Bourgeois, maybe Mike Spain. We'll see. We'll get here in time. And we welcome your letters as well. We'll be right back. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Mike Spain.
I made it through the traffic of the New York State Thruway. We were just channeling Arlo Guthrie at Woodstock. The New York State Thruway is closed, man. It isn't closed, but it's inching along from exit 25 in Schenectady to exit 24 in Albany. And I took some back roads. And
all those other people are still sitting in traffic.
Yeah,
they're wondering how you got
to
out.
Their traffic, they're going to be mad at me, I think, hearing that I was able to get off before they got too far and couldn't make the exit.
Well, we're glad to have you here.
Thank
good
you.
Morning. Good to have you back. Mike has been away, and we'll talk to him a little bit about his trip in a minute. But we have some letters here. We have this one from John, who writes, "Panel, the Germany of Angela Merkel is not the Germany of Adolf Hitler. The Israel of Netanyahu is not the Israel of Golda Meir. Nations change, and when they do, we must keep our ears and eyes and especially our minds open, and we must have the courage to speak."
And I agree with that, by the way. I do.
Alan says, "Doctor, thank you for your candor regarding Israel's decision-making." One Alan to another. John says, "Good morning, panel. The problem, as I see it, is with the deaths in Gaza, is that while they are tragic, what is the other side of the issue? Are nations supposed to simply allow a group of non-citizens into their country because that group wants to? What other option is there but to open fire after giving warnings?"
Ooh.
I think there are other options, aren't there?
Hoses, water hoses,
diplomacy,
you know, plastic bullets, diplomacy.
Diplomacy.
Well, in all
don't
fairness,
let it come to this.
The other side, the Hamas-driven protesters, mm-hmm. were not polite or doing anything to do anything but provoke
no.
this. I mean, they were fighting this, and frankly, probably wanted this result so that it would tarnish what many were celebrating or trying to celebrate.
But there was interesting reporting from the area in terms of, you know, was the response commensurate with the protests? And people thought, no, it was not.
No, I think it was
at all. It was, you know, that's the problem.
These were not armed individuals who were coming with weapons that could, you know, take on an army. They were, right.
They clearly wanted their voices heard, but that the, you know, by all accounts from.
Well, they were trying to cross a border.
Right.
I mean, trying to break.
I would try to make the case that they wanted the headlines today of dozens of Palestinians killed. They came with rocks. They came with bombs. They were warned that if they went up against the fence that they were going to get shot at, and they did so anyway. So whether an army faced with thousands of people with rocks and potential terrorists embedded in them had a commensurate response, it's hard for a military to, you know, keep score on how commensurate our response is going to be with these people coming at us.
And you know, for whatever it's worth, NPR did an interview with a guy, a colonel from the Israeli Defense Force this morning, who claims that there were several guns in that crowd and that they were firing. Now, there will be people on the other end of the radio saying, oh, come on, you know, the mass of people didn't have them and the rest of it. And I tend to believe that. I think that's right. But I also subscribe to what both Mike and to Mike and the rest of the conversation here said, and that is that there was no question that this was a moment that they felt deliberate provocation was worth the losses that they were going to take.
But did you that these heavy losses? I think not. I think that this was far worse than. You know, expected. Well, again, just based on what I was reading from reporters who were there, that the response was not commensurate with the protests. That was far.
Well, I agree with what somebody had said before the break, that it was that this kind, the opening of a U.S. embassy in Jerusalem should have come after negotiations and concessions and agreements that all sides would be able to participate in, and to do it in this way was also,
Mike,
done to provoke exactly what happened today, unfortunately.
This is a very tough one. It really is for everybody, and we all know it. But, Mike, do you really think that Hamas, the leadership of Hamas, is ready to do that?
I do not. They're not even ready to recognize the right of existence for Israel as a free state, independent state. I mean, that's the problem here. They have dug in, and you can understand why Israel is so defensive, because Hamas wants to see them destroyed and not exist. It's an existential issue for Israel.
And the moment that a Hamas leader has the courage to say, okay, let's sit down and make this thing work.
He's gone.
He's gone. That's the end.
It's a terribly complicated and
it is.
And not much hope, you know, recurrently.
Right, and that's why the decision to do this now, to move this embassy now, is so disturbing, because this is a clash that did not need to happen.
I agree with
without
you.
Larger,
it doesn't help things at all.
It's not part of a larger strategy that would lead to a peace. That's the problem with this. It's not part of a larger strategy.
Teresa, I don't mean to interrupt, but it's one part of the problem. This is not simplistic stuff. That is for sure.
It's one of the, if not the most complicated places in the world, it's certainly, you know, one of the most complicated places in the world.
Let's just a couple more letters. Linda says, I am fond of Chuck Schumer, but he is a politician like anyone else. And his statement in support of Trump is supporting his constituents. Andre, all right, this is off topic, but the Berkshire Museum auction is in the news today. My question is, are they dumping art irresponsibly, or are they sacrificing some pieces in order to make improvements that will ultimately benefit the public, even those who oppose this method of generating capital for claimed improvements?
I am not one of those people. As you probably know, Joe, I've talked about this a great deal on the radio. And I've been thinking about what I can do as a resident of Berkshire County and what my position is. I've always felt that there's a real need for the Berkshire Museum. I think they blew this one big time. There are an awful lot of people who will not walk, and they're telling me this, they will not walk into that museum. They have great things there, you know. They have a wonderful little movie house where we all go to see particular, and have gone over the years to see particular art films and other things that you wouldn't see anywhere else. But as for me, for a while anyway, I'm not going anywhere near that place. I think there have to be repercussions for riding roughshod over people. And as far as Alan is concerned, my personal feeling about this is they have been so outrageous in what they've done here that I'm not going to go near the place.
Anybody else? All right, let's move on to other stories. And we go to, we just have a few minutes before the break, but I want to, so let me go to a story that probably won't take up as much time, and that is Melania Trump. Hospitalized, undergoes medical procedure to treat a benign condition. And we know that she is at Walter Reed. We know that, according to the White House, because of this condition, she will be hospitalized for the rest of the week. The communications director for the First Lady said the procedure was successful. There were no complications. And again, is at Walter Reed National Military Medical Center and will likely remain there for the duration of the week. The spokesperson went on to say the First Lady looks forward to a full recovery so that she can continue her work on behalf of children everywhere. Early Tuesday, President Trump noted that the First Lady was doing really well and could be released from the hospital in as soon as 2 days. And so that is what we know. We did not know a whole lot going in, and I think it was the press corps and everyone said it was a surprise. But given her, and I say this with great reverence, actually, with her shyness and concern of the press, that she was able to sidestep most of it.
It's not the same issue as Trump's health.
Well, it is in a way, Mike, if you think about it, because they were not credible. It turned with Trump's health. It turns out that that they were at best gilding the lily, right? I mean, by saying
yes, I think so.
That he was dictating to the doctors what the doctors were going to say. So at this stage of the game, when we probably should believe what they have to say to us, I watched Sanjay Gupta on CNN, who is their chief medical correspondent, and he was raising some what I considered to be significant concerns about these reports. What exactly was being done here, and why was this thing being done when it usually isn't in this kind of a reported kidney case? So we don't really know, and I think that to some degree our suspicions are fueled by what the Trump people have done on health care up until this point.
Well, I do agree that it's questionable what they're telling us because they're not credible when it comes to issues of medical health for the president, at least.
Sure.
And so it certainly does that. I don't know what difference it makes in that sense. I mean, I tend to think that she's a very private person. I think that's obvious. Joe mentioned that. And that if it is worse, if there's something more serious than what they're portraying it to be, God bless her. I hope she gets well. And a lot of people downplay their own illness. She's not the commander in chief. It's not the same issue. And I think she deserves the privacy that she evidently wants. And I think it's easy to respect it. I don't think we should respect it with Trump. When he deliberately misleads us about his medical condition and his health, I think that's a serious problem. We saw it with FDR. 3 months after he was reelected, he died from illnesses that he had going into that election, and it was dishonest. And I think presidents need to be open about their health. But as far as first ladies go, I think they're entitled to privacy.
We should say, it just seems that maybe she has a better doctor.
She sure does.
She's
at Walter Reed. She's got the best, and that's why that's good news.
You know, there was a little bit of a hint here. I thought, at least maybe I'm making this up, but I thought in listening to Trump's personal reaction to Melania's illness, it was much more measured than what he did with himself, where he said, you know, he's writing this stuff about the best president and the healthiest president of all times and the rest of this. He didn't say that with her. He was far more cautious. Now, that may be because she was watching him and he knew that he didn't want to get into trouble with her. But it also may be that there's some serious concerns here.
Well, I think we just, as you know, we have to wish her well and give her the privacy that she seeks. And I also think this shows, as was discussed, I read, it shows the difference between her staff, which is very loyal and efficient, and his staff, which is more chaotic. And that I think that this was handled in an efficient way, and that any hesitance by Trump is because he's taking the lead of her staff in terms of handling it the way that she wants to, even to the point where they discuss, well, why wasn't he at the hospital with her? But people appropriately said, all of, you know, what does that bring? It brings a press pool and a motorcade and all of the things that a private person would not want. In this situation.
He did go see her, though, didn't
he? He did, yes. But they waited till after the procedure was over to announce that it even happened.
Via helicopter, because they said I thought this was interesting, but even at 5 o'clock, even if you're president, you still have D.C. traffic. So we took a helicopter from one end of the city to the other.
That's what I need, a helicopter.
That's right. Get your hair. That's right, Mike. Put it into your rider. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. We'll be back right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok is here, Mike Spain, JP Miller, and Teresa Bourgeois. We welcome you and your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. I'm fighting off a sneeze. I lost. Okay.
God bless you. Bless you.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. We have some more letters, and then we will move on to other topics. Anthony writes, is it possible to bring peace to the people of Gaza, the Palestinians, through world economic investment? They will never get their land back. Peace through jobs and self-esteem? Just wondering, Anthony.
Interesting.
Yeah. I think it's a... The right path is to try to rebuild the communities and help them get past the war. But in this current climate and the way things are in the Middle East and in the U.S. and elsewhere, it's going to be a leap to do that.
But you know what, Mike? There are a lot of people of goodwill with money who believes that Gaza is the hellhole that it is. And they none of us last for that long in life. It might be at least a step that somebody could take and say, okay, let me establish a business there. Let me do this or that. The real question for me always has been, will Hamas permit it? Do they want things better there?
But would Netanyahu permit it either?
Yeah, well.
I mean, isn't that the problem also, both?
No,
both.
I don't know. I don't know the answer to your question, Teresa. I don't know that Netanyahu would not permit it. I do know that there have been past Israeli leaders, Sharon and some of the others, who really obviously had a place, a reason for getting the Israelis out of there and not making it an easy place to live in. So you make a point. On the other hand, you're always looking for ways to make it better. So that might be a way to better. And I wouldn't put all that much cold water on it, Teresa, if I were you.
Yeah, no. I mean, I think it would be. That is part of the solution. The problem is that the barriers to that. And I think that Hamas is one barrier, but I don't think Hamas is the only barrier to that, is my point.
Well, when it comes to having barriers there, Hamas is right up at the top. That's obvious.
We got this letter from Bo, who says the median age in Palestine is 18, only a couple of African countries lower. What has been the entire life experience of the vast majority of Palestinians? We can't judge a people from our own older, wiser, privileged perspective.
Good point.
Great point.
Greg says, regarding Egypt's complicity in the repression of Gaza, Egypt, of course, receives billions of U.S. aid for keeping its peace treaty with Israel. That has that has meant collaboration with Israel in the cruel blockade and siege of Gaza. As usual, money rules, and the poor and the downtrodden suffer.
Yeah, you know, that's true. I can never remember. People correct me on this all along. It's either Israel and Egypt number two or Egypt number one. I'm not exactly sure who gets the most, but it doesn't really matter. Egypt gets a ton of money from the United States.
We got this letter from Bob in Scotia, who says that the optics of illegal aliens massing at a border fence and being fired on by the military is the media visuals that Trump wants for his base. Greg says you have the facts wrong. Hamas has explicitly stated that it will recognize Israel if Israel will end the occupation.
But I think that when people within Hamas, I mean, it happened during the Clinton administration, during the Bush administration, the Obama administration, they came close and then ended up not doing it.
Well, they also,
I'm sorry. Go ahead, JP.
The United States also just passed the Taylor Force Act, which goes after Hamas and Palestine for, in their legislation, in their laws, the families of suicide attackers and terrorists get 3 to 4 times the welfare that a typical family gets, and they get bonuses for bloody, gory killings. And so the case that they are excited about peace is I think a challenging case to make.
Well, I agree with you, and I think many people understand that in these the rhetoric of all of this, that you could pick out a piece here or a piece there that somebody else said, but you have to watch what people do as opposed to what one person may say at a particular time.
We got a letter from Sheila who says, your guest's cynical response regarding Palestinians coming prepared to get killed is breathtakingly ignorant. We don't also underwrite the Palestinian economy to the tune of $5 billion a year like we do Israel's. By the way, no discussion on this topic is balanced unless there is someone presenting an Arab or Palestinian perspective.
As you are.
John says, why is this difficult issue to talk about? In the last 8 weeks, the Israeli military has murdered over 100 unarmed protesters and injured thousands. Why is Bernie Sanders the only senator who issued a statement immediately condemning Israel? If the American military fired indiscriminately on Standing Rock protesters, injuring and killing countless Native Americans, we would have had our own Arab Spring moment. If you stand for life, love, and democracy, you have to condemn Israel's actions. That from John in Highland. Thank you very much.
I think there are times you read letters and people have perspectives, and obviously there are a lot of different perspectives here.
All right, let's go to some other topics and move on here before we go to our break at the top of the hour. I didn't get to the story last week, and then I thought it would just go away, but it's not. And that's the John McCain story. It just will not go away. And I guess the question here is why it's so easy for it to go away, which is you have a member of the White House staff refusing to apologize for joking about the Arizona senator's failing health. And why go through what you're going through, meaning just admit that it was a bad thing to say and move on and apologize instead of just saying we're not going to apologize and allow the story to go now on its sixth day? And that's just something I don't get.
Well, first of all, a telephone call was made to McCain's daughter, and obviously it was an apologetic phone call. But I think that the cause of this refusal to make a public apology has to go right to the Oval Office.
I agree.
Obviously, this president has been deeply shamed by McCain on health care, pardon me, and on everything else. And he's not a guy to take it. He just is a small man, a large small man. And, he's not going to let it happen, an official apology, because he has such bad feelings about McCain, having opened his big yap about McCain not being a hero in the very beginning.
I agree with Alan, I think. And this the staffer, to make an apology, doesn't have to do a press conference, doesn't have to make a speech. All it takes is a couple seconds on the Twitter machine to send out a tweet saying, I want to publicly apologize to Senator McCain, an American war hero. The fact that this is a six-day story is hurting the White House. I don't know why they're not just getting it done and apologizing. I think it's ill-advised, and I agree with Alan that I think it probably is coming from the president.
And now you also
have both Republicans and Democrats coming down and saying, well, this is ridiculous. This is absurd. They have great reverence for Senator McCain and the family, and just and move on.
Yeah, but I think it's Trump showing how powerful he is. And maybe that is not as he's not as powerful as he thought, because Republicans are coming out. I mean, Mitch McConnell went and visited John McCain and is calling him an American hero who should be honored as that. And that's a direct repudiation of what the White House has been doing for the last 6 days and prior to that. I think Trump likes to dig in and show his show how brutal he can be. And this is one that is, I think, hurting him. I think that even it's bringing out the Republicans. Finally, some Republicans are standing up to the president and saying that this is wrong. Not a lot. And they're not saying it very strongly. And they're just kind of saying, well, you know, it's wrong and moving on. But at least they're speaking out.
You know, there is a culture, Mike, in the United States Senate. Back in college, it's a long time ago, we used to read Don Matthews' U.S. Senators and Their World. And people take that culture very, very seriously. So when it comes up to the president of the United States, you know, messing with one of their institutional guys, particularly Republican, that culture sort of clicks in and people say, this is too much. I'm going to say something about this.
Well, reportedly in the conversation with McCain's daughter, she said that she would publicly apologize. That's what McCain's daughter has said. But I think the complication is, if she publicly apologizes for the things she said, then does the president have to publicly apologize for the things that he said about McCain? You know, I don't like people who are captured and so on and so forth. And he has been firm in not doing that. He refused repeated opportunities to apologize for what he said about a war hero, a true hero, American hero.
And so that just shows what a stupid small person he is.
Well, I think that's the complicating factor for them, and it's reprehensible and distracting. And maybe he doesn't mind the distraction because, you know.
You know, that's a good point, Teresa. If we're focusing on this, look at all, everything else that's
going
on.
We're not talking about. I noticed that last night on the news coverage, because this deal with the China company is astounding. And if, you know, all of the time they spent last night on cable news about this issue, which I think is important, but they didn't talk about
it. It doesn't reveal anything new. It's consistent with the way he was in refusing to acknowledge that Barack Obama was born in the U.S. and refusing to honor John McCain and take back those mean-spirited comments he made about him. And in a way, though, to keep talking about it is allowing a better story, a more important story, like this China company that we're now backing off. We're worried about jobs in China now. That's our rationale for backing off
sanctions. So that doesn't get untangled because you're talking about this, and he's fine with that.
All right. Well, we're not, so we'll untangle that when we get back. We'll take a break. We will go to news, and Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, J.P. Miller, and Teresa Bourgeois. I'm Joe Donahue. We'll be back right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. It is 8 minutes past 10 o'clock. Just a reminder, the lockbox is open. We've got a cool deal going. We have a blanket and tickets, undated lawn tickets for a spec. What? What?
No, that's too much. That's too much. You can't give away all that. What?
Josh,
you
mean you're getting...
No, we're giving away the store, too.
Oh, please. I mean, you know, what do we have left for the fun drive? This is unbelievable that we're giving away the store. Have you checked with everybody, Colleen and all the other forces?
I think I have all kinds of signatures on this paper here.
You've lost control.
That's right. So you get the blanket. And now, Mike, when Mike came in, he was admiring the blanket. Yes,
it was quite admirable.
He wanted one in his car because he was parked on the thruway and wanted to get out.
He needed to stay warm.
Wanted to get out and sit on the lawn while waiting to move.
What's nice about the blanket is one side is a very soft, you know, blanket feeling substance, probably a fabric of
fleece.
Fleece, yes, that's it. And the other side evidently is a moisture barrier. So when you sit on a lawn at Tanglewood or at SPAC or out in the country, you'll be warm and secure.
There you go. You can get yours with a pair of undated lawn tickets. It's $150. The lockbox is open. We desperately need your help. We need to raise $500,000 before the drive begins on the 4th of June. So
Joshua Bell. Wow.
That's one of the shows that you can see. There's many, many others. The performances, this includes performances for the National Ballet of Cuba, the New York City Ballet, as well as the Philadelphia Orchestra. There are a couple exclusions, the Ballet Gala and the two orchestra concerts that have the movies with Star Wars and Harry Potter. Everything else you can go see and use your Undated Alone tickets for. So keep that in mind. We'd love for you to join in. WAMC.org. We do have a couple of letters. Let me begin there and we'll move on to other topics. Paul says Trump is upset that he is not invited to McCain's funeral, so he's blocking the apology. That's probably something to that.
I think so. I mean, McCain has been very good about not responding in kind, but this must have been very hurtful for the president.
Yeah, I mean, we could assume he wouldn't have gone anyway, but you don't know. But
it's just so crass to be talking about.
Yes,
I don't mean us. I mean them.
No, I understand. Let's see. Joan says, with regard to the suggested use of water hoses to confront those attempting to breach the border fence, water is a scarce commodity in the region, and there is not that type of infrastructure in this area. Also, it should be remembered that the goal of at least some of those trying to breach the fence is to get to neighboring Israeli communities to target these Israelis living there. The IDF does have rubber bullets and non-lethal means in any situations. I think it is difficult for any Americans to accurately picture a situation in which hundreds of thousands of persons are trying to breach a border with hostile intent. Martin says, not apologizing for the McCain insult is right out of the Roy Cohn playbook. Never apologize for anything. Also, Trump is a narcissist, and a narcissist is never wrong in their own eyes. This comes directly from Trump himself.
And he doesn't mind the publicity. It's a distraction. It doesn't hurt him anymore. That for those who are upset about it, that they're already upset, it's baked in. It doesn't hurt him. It hurts our country, you know, but it doesn't hurt him.
A landmark court ruling yesterday, let us talk about this, and it could change a lot of things in our country, and that is having to do with sports betting. The Supreme Court ruling favors sports betting. The Supreme Court struck down a 1992 federal law on Monday that effectively banned commercial sports betting in most states, opening the door to legalizing the estimated $150 billion $150 billion in illegal wagers
every year
on professional and amateur sports that Americans make every year. The decision.
I love this story. I'm sorry, go ahead, Joe.
Yeah, just a couple things. The decision seems certain to result in profound changes to the nation's relationship with sports wagering. Bettors will no longer be forced into the black market to use offshore wagering operations or illicit bookies. Placing bets will be done on mobile devices fueled and endorsed by the lawmakers and sports officials who opposed it for so long. A trip to Las Vegas to wager on March Madness or the Super Bowl could soon become quaint because you can do it right on your phone in your office while you're getting paid by your employer.
I have two words. I have two words to say, Pete Rose. I mean, you know, part of this, of course, is going to be that it has been going on. We all know it. Roselle and I were eating breakfast in Barney Greengrass, the Sturgeon King in New York, the other day, and the waiter came up to a guy, and they were discussing. I don't know how this stuff works. You guys know better than I. We ought to have Ray Graff here. What the line? What the line is? You know the words.
Yeah, the morning
is
line.
Is it two points up or 6 points? We'll give you six on this and that and that. So it's been going on. That was clear.
Published in the paper. The line.
Yeah.
Right. So it's clear. Everybody knows. And also, how many people attended the day before? That's the number, right? Isn't that always been the number when you say how many people were at Yankee Stadium yesterday, and that exact number becomes the number that everybody bets on. But in any case, the real problem here is going to be what the ball players do. In other words, does anybody drop a fly ball?
Right. I mean, it does endanger the integrity. Betting on sports in general, whether it's legal or illegal, does tend to endanger the integrity of sport and what it's all about. But it's not going to happen right away in New York. There's a bill in the legislature that needs a lot of work. And the governor, Cuomo, said yesterday that there's just not enough time to make it before the end of the session in a few weeks. And it'll probably be another year before they craft something. But even then, they're not expecting to get a win. windfall from legal sports betting because there's such an infrastructure for illegal sports betting and pools and football bets and stuff like that. And you know, all it does is just, I guess it raises the level that could be the threat to legitimate sports. And then we don't know what the impact will be at the Indian casinos, Native American casinos like Turning Stone, right in the shadow of Syracuse basketball and football. You know, will they be taking bets and do they need to adhere to the New York State rules? I don't think so. Now that the Supreme Court has said states can do it, so can independent nations like the Indian nation can. So
I love it when Cuomo says we don't have enough time. This is a guy who got the very good gun bill through in about 3.5 minutes. You know, they can do anything they want overnight, as we all know. So it's always great to hear Cuomo protesting there's not enough time.
As I hear about the sports betting debate and the Supreme Court enabling states to allow it, I think a lot of marijuana legalization, whereas if you're an avid marijuana smoker or if you're an avid sports bettor, you're going to find a way to do that activity. Mm-hmm. But with legalizing marijuana for recreational use and allowing sports betting on cell phones, I think it does have the potential to make it a more widespread, normalized practice in our society. And the question, you know, for the Supreme Court is really whether it's constitutional. The question for us is that the kind of society, that the kind of state that we want to live in? And there are certainly pluses and minuses to having those two things legalized and normalized.
Well, just one last thing, Joe, and we ought to mention that the DAs of Queens and Manhattan, district attorneys, have just announced they are not going to be prosecuting low-level marijuana offenses anymore. That's extraordinary.
Well, you know, and the leagues themselves, the NBA, the NFL, the NHL, the MLB, the NCAA, they have all come out against this nominally. They have come out against it. When New Jersey repealed its law against sports gaming, they sued the state. So what I think is going to be interesting over the next couple of days, weeks, months, years is the infrastructure that is built to be able to handle this. Because you have security, you obviously have you're dealing with people's money, you're dealing with money. So there's going to have to be quite an infrastructure system to move that amount of cash from one place to the other, to make sure that it is that everybody gets their cut, and to figure that out. And I'm sure that's going to be a long road.
The leagues were against it. They are now very much for it because they are going to take their cut. The billionaire owners of the Major League Baseball and the NBA are now going to get what they call, I think it's called an integrity fee for them to protect the integrity of the game. And so I believe that the league owners are...
Nothing says integrity like cash in your pocket.
But I think the players' unions did come out against it.
Sure, sure. Right. But like I think Mark Cuban yesterday, the billionaire owner of the Dallas Mavericks, said that if legalized gambling goes through in all these states and the leagues, and when you say the league, it's really the billionaire owners, if they're able to get a cut, it's going to double the values of all of these major sports teams.
Very good point.
All right. That is one story that I wanted to get to. Let me get to another one here in our 4 minutes left. We go to, let's talk about Mike Pence for a moment. I think Teresa brought up a point yesterday about Pence not going to Jerusalem and some of the questions there that he stayed home. There's an article in the New York Times today that is titled simply, Pence is trying to control Republican politics. Trump aides are not happy. And what they're saying is that the eager assistance that Mr. Pence is providing the Republican Party is showing a political portfolio that the vice president and aides have seized for themselves as the 2018 elections approach. While Mr. Trump remains an overpowering personality in Republican politics, he is mostly uninterested in the mechanics of managing a political party. His team of advisors is riven with personal divisions, and the White House has yet crafted a strategy for the midterms, so Mr. Trump's supremely disciplined running mate has stepped into that void. We sort of talked about this for a long time of what the vice president has been up to here.
Yeah, well, he stands to benefit from it in a whole lot of ways. Certainly, if Trump is not around in 2020 for whatever reason, or decides that he's not going to run for re-election, or looks at the numbers and decides that Pence is there, he's got a political infrastructure, he's all ready to step in. And if not, you know, 4 more years, you know, he'll be there in 2024. And why wouldn't he just build the structure for that? And there's a big vacuum since the Trump people are not stepping in to do all this.
Agree. This guy, Nick Ayers, who is Pence's chief of staff, is at 35 years old, already created a huge reputation for himself among Republican Party loyalists and donors and operatives. And Trump has, as is stated in so many articles, Trump has very little interest in building the party. He likes to go to rallies and get cheered for and at, but he doesn't have interest in actually doing the work of party building. And this guy, Nick Ayers, and Pence both have huge incentive to do that work so that Pence can run and get the nomination whenever Trump gets out, whether it's before 2020 or after the next election.
Right, and he has built an infrastructure within the White House. It's a political as opposed to a policy-heavy staff infrastructure, and he has his own external PAC that they run. And he has, as this New York Times article, there's one in Politico also that talks about how he has staff strategically placed throughout the administration who are loyal to him, who have worked with him in the past. And he's methodically going around the country raising money for candidates, raising money for the party, doing favors for folks, doing the party building that Trump is not doing. And he's essentially, it's not getting a lot of attention because obviously Trump is the focus of all of the attention.
Okay, but burbling under the surface here, and I just...
The attention.
Yes, the tension between these two men. If that starts to become an issue, that will be fascinating to watch.
Well, I think it's interesting because you have these two stories that have come out, the political story in the New York Times. I think they will beget additional stories. And one of the things they talk about, just like they talk about with the First Lady staff, is that Pence's staff is very loyal to him. You don't get a lot of leaks out of that. You don't get a lot of infighting. And Trump's staff obviously is not. And I think that if the more attention that Pence gets for this, the more conflict you're going to have between Pence and Trump.
You know, you have to go back in history to watch this. One of the advantages of being a little older is that I remember when Eisenhower was the president and Nixon was the guy who did all of the political organizing. And, you know, people have been referring to other presidents since that time. But quite often it has fallen to, you know, if I were Pence right now, I'd be very unhappy. He's done everything but literally kiss the behind of the president. And he has, in fact, done it philosophically. And here comes this narrative that everybody's picking up on, which is saying, it's not enough. You really are a scoundrel. You're right. Really knifing him in the back.
The George Will column was stunning.
Oh, that was,
it was stunning, and it's writing, its choice of words. And then not only did he write the column, but then he was all over the cable TVs
talking about how obsequious Pence has been, and stating over and over how blessed we are that you are our president, Mr. Trump, and everything, and just repeating
I would say that's the role largely of a vice president.
That's a little over the top.
Is to support the president, and he does not have a specific portfolio like a Treasury Secretary or Secretary of State. What is a vice president's job, right, other than to wait by the telephone?
You're right, except for think about Biden. Obama gave him very substantive jobs. I interrupted.
He did,
Mm-hmm.
All right, we are out of time. My thanks to everybody. Alan, thank you very much.
Thank you.
JP, thank you. Teresa, always good to see you. And Mike, welcome back. Very nice to have you
back. Thank you.
Thank you. We will continue with the program right after this short break.